Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour has written a very interesting and important piece in The Atlantic titled PTSD in the Driver's Seat. Long-haul trucking can leave workers vulnerable to a host of mental health issues, but the demands of the job often mean they have trouble accessing care. Professor Ann Bailey writes that around a third, huge number, of the 3.5 million truck drivers in the U.S. will be involved in a serious road accident at some point during their careers. That's more than a million people experiencing, she writes, potentially severe job-related trauma. Part of this has to do with the makeup of the trucking industry in the first place, and we'll talk about that. And even when they want mental health care for having witnessed an accident or been in one, or just for the loneliness, as you can imagine, you might experience if you're spending all this time by yourself on the road. It's hard to access the care. Some don't want to because of the stigma of accessing mental health care, but you're missing medical appointments if you're not feeling well because you're on the road all the time. So we're going to be talking about all of this hour. It makes the roads, of course, less safe, not only for truckers, but for everybody who's on the road. Our guest has a really interesting background. She must have been listening to books on tape. She is a former long-haul trucker, and she is now assistant professor of anthropology at Haverford College. Received her PhD from the University of Chicago, and after that, she became a car mechanic. She's also the author of Steel Closets, Voices of Gay, Lesbian, and Transgender Steelworkers, and she is with us this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. I'm very interested in hearing, and we do. Usually on every show, we hear from at least one long-haul driver. We did last hour, someone from Kentucky. So those of you who are doing this for a living, we're very interested in hearing from you this hour. Is this spot on, what our guest will be saying, the problems that you face and how hard it is to do what you do and seeking advice for PTSD, those of you who may suffer from it? The number again, 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. And Bailey, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
What a life you've had. I mean, a long-haul trucker and a professor of anthropology, and you're an author? For heaven's sake, how do you do all of this in a lifetime?
And I have two kids.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's been an experience.
I'll bet it's been an experience. I was so struck by the article you wrote in The Atlantic because I think many of us think about long-haul drivers when we're on the road, and I think about how hard a life it may be and how lonely it may be, but I never realized how dangerous it might be. It is dangerous.
It's one of the most dangerous jobs, statistically, in the U.S., and it's important to note that most of these accidents aren't caused by truckers, right? Mm-hmm. Most of them are caused by automobiles. Distracted driving is the most common cause of accidents. You know, alcohol, you know all the causes. But truckers are the first ones there. Mm. So even though they, you know, they're not causing the problem, they witness it and they have to therefore kind of deal psychologically and emotionally with what that does to them.
Mm-hmm. And those, what you see can stay with you as that when you've seen things that are horrible, sometimes that can stay with you and really create mental health problems for you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm an oral historian, so I interview people in order to do my writing. And I've been interviewing truck drivers for the last year and a half, and almost all of them have stories of accidents they've seen. In some cases, accidents they were involved in other cases, just accidents that they were the first on the scenes of. Mm-hmm. And they're haunted by the memory of them, the kind of mental image of them, the sort of feeling of trying to help. You know, one of them had a trucker die in his arms because he got out of the truck and went and helped this trucker he didn't know. Mm. And, you know, was trying to help, waiting for an ambulance when the trucker died. So, the experiences are fairly harrowing.
Mm. And then you couple that with, and explain how it was for you, that you're on the road for these really long periods of time. You're rarely home. You're by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, people don't know how long truckers drive. So we have this sense that there's an eight-hour workday in the U.S., but that does not apply to truckers who are not managed by the Bureau of Labor, but by the Bureau of Transportation. So the workday is 14 hours
wow.
for truckers, of which 11 hours is driving. And it's not just a five-day work week. They do this continuously. So truckers frequently drive 11 hours a day and work considerably more because there's a lot of kind of unpaid work truckers do, waiting, unloading. So they have very long work days, and they do that for extended periods of time. So truckers will frequently be away from home for 2 weeks, or many of them work 360 days a year in order to make enough money to support themselves.
So it doesn't pay very well?
No, it doesn't pay well at all. There was a moment before 1970s when trucking paid very well and when it was one of the few remaining routes to the middle class. But that is no longer true. The average trucking salary is $30,000.
Really?
Annually, yes. And that's for working 14 hours a day, more or less continuously.
How can anybody be asked to drive, and that's a big responsibility, you're driving a big piece of equipment, 11 hours a day, people would fall asleep.
Yeah, well, I mean, truckers, they typically don't fall asleep. They're very, you know, they love the work. They love to drive. They love being behind the wheel and seeing, you know, the sights that they see. It doesn't mean that they would not prefer to do it for a shorter amount of time. I mean, the reason I went into trucking is that I love to drive. And I can drive for a really long time and be alert and, you know, enjoy myself, but I don't necessarily want to do it the next day, right?
Right.
And the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. So sort of the ongoing, continuous exhaustion that they face. I mean, I read a statistic that said that one in three truckers reports falling asleep at the wheel in the past 30 days.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
And, you know, that was just self-reporting. And who knows, but yeah, they're tired.
I'm sure.
And unpaid, and don't feel respect from the culture as a whole, right? So most truckers feel like the culture as a whole thinks they're dirty, disreputable, beneath contempt in every way, and makes that completely clear.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they know that they're delivering what we all use every day, and we couldn't do anything without them.
Absolutely.
There's that kind of cultural...
Right. You have to have truckers, no doubt about it.
Uh-huh.
And then I was reading some other article that showed that you have to find a place to sleep every night, and states are shutting down designated mm-hmm. trucker rest stops along interstates to cut costs. So
yep.
you have to park along the interstate, or you have to go out of your way to find a spot that may be way off your route.
Yes, and it's very complicated because there's also this very rigid 14-hour clock that truckers are working under now. So in the past, there was a set amount of time that truckers could drive each day, but they could control when that was. So you could drive, say, 4 hours. If you felt tired, pull over, take a nap, drive the rest of your available time. But now the micromanagement of truckers has increased so much that the 14-hour time clock is very rigid, and they don't have that kind of flexibility at all. So when they're out of time, they have to stop, and there's often no legal place for them to park. So there are many sort of catch-22 situations in which the trucker cannot follow all the rules that are imposed on them. Like, there's no way. So according to their hours of service, they have to stop. According to parking, there's no legal parking. And if they park on an exit ramp, they can get a ticket for parking there. So there's no sort of way for them to do what they're supposed to do because they're at the mercy of all of these kind of competing regulations placed on them.
Mm. I also have read, and tell me if this is true or not, that in addition to suffering from post-traumatic stress from seeing horrible accidents, that there are also a number of health concerns that a lot of drivers, because you're sitting all the time, don't get mm-hmm. much exercise. There's a lot of obesity.
Mm-hmm.
There's problems with diabetes and high cholesterol levels. All of that is true?
Yes. I mean, think about the hours here. If you're working 14 hours a day, and often more because of the waiting, the maintenance issues. So if you're working that much, and then, I mean, I'm a runner. I run every morning. I thought when I was trucking that I could continue to do that, like that I would wake up in the morning and go for a run and then get in the truck and drive. And every place that I parked, there was nowhere to run. There was down the side of the highway with all the sort of roadkill and stuff you see, but that's the only place. So in terms of exercise, other than things you can do in the cab of the truck, there's very little possibility for exercise. And you see what truckers can eat. I mean, they're at truck stops. They can eat fast food. A lot of truckers are very careful about packing healthy food, having it with them, trying to be really, really conscious about food. But if you have no exercise, bad food, long work hours, and you're sedentary, the health issues are huge. And it's so, one thing that our culture tends to do is blame people for that instead of look at the structural factors that make it unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you going to do? Obviously, then, when you're 20 or in your 20s or 30s, you're likely to start gaining weight because of the schedule that you're working on. And then it becomes increasingly harder to do anything about your weight. You're likely to develop other health problems like diabetes, like sleep problems that result from being heavy. And it sort of starts to snowball and you feel like you're losing control of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would like to do is think about what structural factors are making that happen. Like, it's not that truckers are lazy or don't want to exercise or anything, but just that the food that's available and the exercise that is available contribute to this kind of problem where they can't take care of themselves.
Yeah. I've read, and I'm wondering how common these are, that there are some truck stops now that have workout facilities in them.
I've read that. I didn't come upon any.
Really?
You know, it does happen. There are some, but they're few.
So what do you want to see happen? How can this situation change? It sounds like it can't continue for truckers like this, or pretty soon you're going to have people, if the economy picks up a lot, who just aren't going to want to be truckers. It's too hard.
Well, one thing that's happening is that other parts of the labor market are going into trucking. So there's an increase in women, an increase in immigrants, an increase in queer people who are going into trucking. So at least temporarily, that will meet the worker shortage. The problem you have then is if older, more experienced truckers are being forced out of the market for various reasons, either because the pay is going down or because their weight and health are making it impossible for them to keep their license.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's happening and less experienced people are entering the industry and don't have adequate training, then that's going to kind of contribute to crashes and contribute to the bad attitude that people in culture in general have about truckers. So in terms of answering the question, what can be done? What the government tends to do is respond to crash statistics by increasing micromanagement and regulation of truckers. So, for example, changing the 14-hour hours of service rules to make them more rigid, changing parking regulations so that you can't park in exit ramps, doing things to increase the surveillance of truckers in an attempt to try to make their jobs safer. But that's not an effective strategy. And everybody knows in every other industry that clamping down on the people who struggle is not a way to improve the situation. What you have to do instead is look at structural factors that make the people struggle to start with, right? So why is working that long allowed for truckers when it's not allowed for any other American workers?
So can you get switched from to the Department of Labor rather than Department of Transportation so somebody else is regulating working conditions?
Well, that would be huge. I mean, I wrote a op-ed with my collaborator, Mona Chattel. We also wrote an op-ed in the New York Times in which we argued for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that would bring about a very sweeping cultural change, which is at this moment, the person who profits from the trucking industry the way it is now is the American consumer.
Mm.
Because goods distribution is a competitive market now in which the person who moves the freight cheapest gets the contract. And so we get food and other commercial goods very cheap in the U.S. because nobody's being paid to move it around.
Right.
So it's not just that, you know, the trucking industry would be affected. It's that everybody who wants to have cheap, readily available consumer goods available to everyone would need to accept that. Truckers deserve respect and a reasonable job circumstance, and therefore we need to be willing to pay them to move our crap around.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of sweeping cultural change is hard to imagine happening. Mm.
Well, that's why we're talking about it. Our guest this hour is a former long-haul trucker. She's a visiting assistant professor of anthropology at Haverford College. And she also is the author of Steel Closets, Voices of Gay, Lesbian, and Transgender Steelworkers. She's had quite a varied career life, hasn't she? She wrote a very interesting piece in The Atlantic that looks at the problems, PTSD, but we're going beyond that, that long-haul truck drivers face, the numbers who do, how low-paid a profession this is, and how risky it is, fraught with all kinds of health problems, and why truckers are reluctant and just really don't have the time to seek out medical help. Our phone number, with a particular call out to those of you who are long-haul truckers, our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And Bailey is our guest. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. We have many of them coming in. John in East Troy, our first caller for you, Ann. Hi, John.
Hey, this is John. How are you doing?
Good, John. How are you?
Good. Okay,
good.
I'm a long-haul trucker, and what we like to say amongst ourselves is that we've all had tough or worse jobs. I mean, you come down to the guy who's driving the truck, who used to be a coal miner, who used to be a
lawyer. I'm sorry, your phone is really cutting on us, John, and I couldn't hear what you said, and I really wanted to hear it. So used to be a
Coal miner, I think.
Coal miner, okay. We'll take it from there. A lot of truckers have had worse jobs.
Sure, definitely. I mean, as bad as $30,000 is, minimum wage is way less. And truckers do have some control over our daily schedule and experience in a way that minimum wage service industry workers don't. So, you know, if that's happening to jobs in the United States increasingly where your options are few, then trucking looks like a good option. That's why so many women are entering the industry now, because because of what their choices are.
Mm-hmm.
And coal mining is a rough job.
Oh, it's, yeah.
You know, bad for you in a million ways.
Right. And if you compare, if you look at long-haul trucking, say, in the 1960s, and what kind of comparison could you make? Did it pay a whole lot more then than it does now?
Well, the International Brotherhood of the Teamsters would have to enter into that conversation, right? So trucking used to be a unionized job, and unions were a huge influence in how these jobs were experienced and what people did in them. So
Right. Yes,
it was a much better paying job. There was much more control that truckers had over their lives, because when you're in a union job, you feel like the other people who are working in the same job are on your side, and you can collectively work together to support your collective best interests, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now there's much more of a competitive, we're fighting for freight to see who can get the most miles, to see who can make enough money to survive. So yes, until 1973, when deregulation happened, it was a much better job than it is now.
John, thanks for your call. I'm sorry we couldn't hear you very well. Dan in Franksville, hi.
Yeah, I'm glad someone's on here. Telling in general, the truck drivers, they don't make no money. That is true. That's a problem that would cause anyone some problems in their economic or their even in their health, because it's economic. But I've seen, like, I don't know why I've seen so many terrible accidents, and I won't even say them on the air because they're not real graphic, just really sick, like the stuff that's happened. You know where I've little girls ran over and stuff, and I wouldn't get into it, but I think that people can be traumatized when I see it. For some reason, I'm a mechanic too. I hate cars so much and stuff, and because I've seen all the death and stuff like that, when I come on an accident, which is not that often, when I do, twice, people were screaming and yelling around the area, and I says that there's no need to scream. Like I says, I'm pretty hard. Says there's no need to scream and shout because people. This is what people want. They love cars. They see the stuff on TV and stuff. But, you know, when you see death like this, you deserve what you get. I'm not trying to be mean to them. I'm just saying that, and then the facts of it. When you look at the where the reality leads you, if you love death machines, these things are killing. They're death machines.
All right, Tian. So would you agree with him that most of the problems are caused by drivers and unsafe cars, Anne?
Definitely. Most road accidents are caused by automobile drivers. And cell phones are a huge issue.
Right.
Automobile drivers who are texting while driving.
Oh,
and the
right.
thing is that if you're in a truck, you're way up high, right? So you can see them.
Mm-hmm.
And they often stop, and automobile drivers don't realize how long it takes a truck to stop. So, you know, we've all been in the highway and noticed that another driver is behaving erratically and come upon them and realize they're texting. But if you're driving a truck, you have a machine that's very hard to control. It takes longer to stop. Turning is obviously very complicated. The trailer is 53 feet long.
Right.
So often what happens is cars behave in, you know, they dash in, they have road rage or texting or, you know, they behave irresponsibly. And if other cars are around them, they can react quickly and nothing bad happens. But with the truck, no matter how alert the truck driver is, sometimes they can't do anything to prevent an accident.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan, for your call. Steve in Grand Marsh. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Steve.
I just had a couple things to point out. I've been driving 13 years. In that 13 years, I've stayed right around 39 cents a mile. According to the national statistic, I was supposed to be 40 cents a mile. But there's no, for the longer you're in truck driving, they always seem to compare you to the people coming in. And my second point is, now with the electronic logbook coming out, parking spaces will be very minimal. I will take the call or finish the comments on the radio.
Okay. Did you hear all that, Ann?
I heard bits of it.
All right.
So part of it is electronic logging and the relationship between electronic logging and parking.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just explain what that is.
Okay.
In electronic logging, the computer in your truck points out that you're driving to your company whenever you're driving. So you can't, you know, fudge it for 5 minutes or 10 minutes if you're almost at a parking spot. You can't do that because then you can be in violation. So the other thing that electronic logging does is almost all shipping and receiving places open at a similar time, 5, 6, or 7 in the morning. And so if you have to be there to do a drop-off or pickup, then everybody winds up having to park at around the same time, right? As many driving hours as possible
right.
from that moment. So you can be a trucker driving around rest stops for hours looking for an open parking spot that's legal, and nothing is available. And if you're running out of hours and, you know, you're about to be in violation and there's a ticket that gets written, you, the driver, have to pay that ticket. And it can be a very expensive ticket. And if you get several of them, you can lose your CDL and your right to drive. So because electronic logging is a very rigid system and because trucking operates on a particular schedule, often an increase in electronic logging causes an increase in fight for limited available legal parking.
Mm. Thanks, Steve, very much for your call. Let's go to Stephen in Norwalk. Hi, Stephen.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Well, I guess my comment I was going to say that typically I think the $30,000 a year is kind of low for most over-the-road drivers. I think when it gets to more local, it's closer to $30,000 a year, but I guess, well, I make $55,000 a year, and that's fairly common. I think, you know, it's a little higher than usual, but, you know, 45 is, you know, frequently where people start, and 50 is probably pretty usual for, you know, if you're out on the road for a week or two at a time.
Where do you drive, Stephen? You drive across country?
It's pretty much local. It's not local. It's regional. I'm in, like, Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, Ohio.
And how long have you been driving?
I've had my license for about 20 years. I drove a little bit when I first got it, but then my kids were born, so I stayed home for that, for a number of years there while they were still young. And I've been driving for the last 5 years.
Uh-huh. And did you move up to 55,000? Is that, year after year of service?
No, well, it starts, it does move up a bit. You typically start in the mid-30s. It normally pays cents per mile. Most jobs will start in the, 35 cents a mile, 40 cents a mile, somewhere right in there.
Mm-hmm.
So you typically start at, 45,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the, other things, getting into the doctor, just home time, that's very true. And, electronic logging, just making things very complicated. Oh, my goodness. That makes life much more complicated.
Mm-hmm. Anne.
Mm-hmm.
What about the salary? You mentioned $30,000. He's saying he's making 55.
Yeah, 30 is average. So
I see.
It's cents per mile, right? So it's one of the remaining jobs in the U.S. that's piecework. So if you're paid by the mile, what can happen is if there isn't freight, you can be stuck at a rest stop or, your company headquarters or whatever for days waiting for freight. Frequently that happens on weekends. Sometimes it doesn't. So there are people who make 50, 55,000 because they're getting a lot of miles and a lot of freight, and that's great. But it's also so common for people to make 20, 25 because they're not, and they're sitting around and they're not at home. So they're at a rest stop. They have to eat that food. They have to buy it. So, you're talking about averages. It sounds like it's working great for him, but there are so many people for whom it doesn't that we need to think about them too.
Yeah. Thanks, Stephen, very much. Susan in Wauwatosa. Hi.
Hi. I'm just really glad to hear this program. I'm good friends with a trucker who is trying to organize an organization for truckers to work on some of these issues. He's in a union, but the unions aren't actually doing that much. I'm just curious what the average person can do to put pressure on lawmakers to try to shift some of these things.
Well, I'm not sure. I think that information is the first key, right? So many people don't know what trucker situations are. So support for unions, support for getting people any kind of union protection they can get, and just kind of knowledge about what the situation is out there for truckers so that, there's this stereotype that truckers make a lot of money and have a lot of freedom. And since those things are no longer true, even just kind of knowing that and being sure that people who set policy know. So it is the things like electronic logging are new laws coming down right now. So public pressure on things like that would be really helpful so that there's an understanding that truckers can do their job and they know what they're doing, and we don't need tons of micromanaging government intervention about all the details of the job.
What do you do about just being behind the wheel for 11 hours a day? How do you stay alert? How do you pass the time? Obviously, you have to be alert to what's going on around you, but to focus for that long a period of time and not have really anybody to talk to, what do you do about loneliness? What do you do about filling the hours?
Well, there are things they teach you in trucking school, like you need to be very alert. So you look to the left and you pause for a minute, and then you look to the right and you pause for a minute, and you scan distance and you scan close range, and your eyes are always moving because you need to anticipate way in advance of what's going to happen, right? Because it takes you a long time to turn or to brake. So your eyes move constantly and you remain very aware of your surroundings, and that kind of keeps you alert and keeps you kind of focused on the road. But a lot of drivers listen to books on tape.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of drivers have very active imaginations. I mean, if you talk to them as a group of people, they're sort of interesting and aware and plugged into kind of politics and culture because they have a lot of time and they kind of daydream and think about stuff. I mean, they're a really interesting group of people for that reason. You can only succeed as a trucker if you're happy being alone with yourself.
I'm sure.
For a huge amount of time. So this means they're kind of philosophers, a lot of them. They have a lot of time to think, and they do. And they're, you know, interesting to talk to and have thoughts and reactions.
Thanks, Susan, very much for your call. We go to Tracy in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to mention this. I know it's not exactly what you're discussing today, but when you talked about the average of $30,000 per year for a trucker, and that's better than minimum wage, I just wanted to bring up the more national topic of increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour, which equals out to $30,000 a year. And so this is yet another, you know, I guess, example of how do we make this work across the board and not just for those struggling at the bottom making $725, $750, you know?
You want to respond, Dan?
Well, definitely. I mean, if we raise the minimum wage to 15, what we're doing is acknowledging that every human being deserves to be fed and housed with some degree of, you know, comfort. And, you know, that's to put aside the issue of the glaring poverty of Americans who aren't working. So if you don't even have a minimum wage job, what are you doing to support yourself? What are you eating? How is that working? So there's a lot of research now that sociologists are doing about the vanishing safety net and the way that there are plenty of Americans who are literally making and living on nothing. And what that's like. So what we need to do as a culture is learn more about the circumstances of people who are struggling. So, and truckers is just one example. Like you said, I wrote my previous book about steelworkers, but it's very easy because of the media saturation that we have in the United States to think that everything's fine for everybody.
Right.
And what I'm trying to do in my research is go up to people and in detail say, just tell me what your life is like. Tell me what you do each day. Tell me how it's working. Tell me what the problems are so that we can get a more sort of thoughtful analysis of what people's lives are, what would help them, how to make that happen, just by asking them to share their stories and kind of increase knowledge about. And that's what made things like the Fight for 15 happen. People saying, oh, wow, this is not enough to live on. Mm-hmm. What can we do about that to make that better? Yeah.
We spent a lot of the last hour, we do a political show every Monday, we do a lot of them, but this idea that, you know, we're not listening to people who are truckers, we're not listening to people who are having a very hard time getting by at all, and you wonder why there's such dissatisfaction with politics in this country, or we get extreme candidate is... because people aren't listening. You know, there's no way to make it through a political process to say, wait a second, we're not doing very well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so many workers are struggling and so many people can't get work. So they're extra struggling. And, you know, those people need a government that is listening to them, cares about them, and is trying to strategize what will help.
Right. Tracy, thanks for your call. Jacqueline in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I'm a trucker, and so many issues I could bring up, but a couple of things. As far as for women, it's a lot of women have concerns about their safety, like in truck stops. They don't even want to leave their truck except necessity of going into the truck stop to use the restroom or something.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I was looking at a series of comments from a woman trucker who said, what do you do around your truck to be safe at night? And most of their responses were, don't leave it. And, you know, they have systems that they discuss among themselves about how to go to the bathroom in there so that you don't have to leave the truck. And there's also all of this information shared about how to lock the truck using your seatbelt so that even people who have the keys can't get in there. So there's a lot of anxiety about safety out on the road. Another thing that I do is interview and collect stories specifically from trans people who truck. So then you're crossing with the whole North Carolina, Mississippi bathroom controversy right now.
Yeah.
What if you're a trans person who drives a truck? What kind of bigotry are you likely to face? What kind of safety issues are you likely to run into? What kind of happens to you out there? So I'm collecting a lot of stories about that. And a surprising number of trans women are truck drivers.
Really? Why is that?
Well, you can get a job.
I see.
And, you know, it's hard as a trans woman to get a job. It's much harder to be undetectable for various sort of random physical reasons having to do with, like, the size of your hands. So if you're a trans man, you can be sleuthed much more easily than if you're a trans woman. And so there's a lot of prejudice in employment. And as a trucker, you can get a job. Plus, you're not having to fit into a work culture because you're by yourself in the truck. So if your work culture is going to be unwelcoming to you, and you've been in a job where people were bigoted, hostile, you know, whispery, whatever,
yes,
then you might want to be a trucker so you can escape that and just be out by yourself and be allowed to work.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the reasons.
Mm. Isn't that sad, be by yourself and be allowed to work?
Right, yeah, so if that's what
it takes.
That's
all I'm asking for, yeah.
Yeah.
Jacqueline, thanks for the call. Rich in Two Rivers, hi.
Yeah, hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Yeah, I respect truckers. I lied about my age back when I was 16. I'm 58 now. And I loaded freight on a docks in New York for the Teamsters, and I actually shook hands with Jimmy Hoffa when he came around. And I've come a long way in my life. And the problem with trucking is no different than a problem with most jobs that are not super professional. I am a professional. I went on to be a physical therapist, and I have worked in the field for 30 years. And I have treated thousands of people, and I am now, like truckers, micromanaged to the point where I have to punch out on an iPod to go to the bathroom.
Mm.
And I would go back to loading freight and leaving my job behind in a heartbeat. And not to undermine what your guest is saying, it's not what she's saying. It is what it is.
Ann?
Well, you can't go to trucking to escape micromanagement, right? I mean, trucking is very micromanaged at this moment. So, and, you know, the guest said that, right? But the medical supervision of truckers, the sort of personal, for example, lots of trucks now have two-way cameras installed in them so that the home company can observe the truck. And they say they only turn it on when there's an emergency, but, you know, how are they going to detect that? So there's a lot of sense that even in the truck, which is where you live, you're supervised, observed, have no privacy, have no sort of control over your situation. So it is, and that's just an example of the micromanagement. It's a job in which increasingly over time you're considered less able to make your own decisions and being told what to do and when and how. So,
more phone calls in a moment. We're talking about long-haul trucking this hour of the program with a woman who is a former long-haul trucker. She's now visiting assistant professor of anthropology at Haverford College. She is the author of Steel Closets, Voices of Gay, Lesbian, and Transgender Steelworkers. And Bailey is our guest, and we're hearing from a lot of truckers this hour as well. The article that she wrote in The Atlantic focused on PTSD that truckers are feeling after having been involved in or witnessed some various serious accidents, but it goes beyond that. We're talking about the working conditions and the pay and the food and being micromanaged, et cetera, with her, and welcoming your phone calls. Lines have been very busy, so just remember the number, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Harold. Hi,
yes,
Harold.
Hello, Joy. How are you today?
It's Kathleen. I'm fine, Harold. How are you?
Kathleen.
That's all right.
Kathleen, I've been driving for 35 years. Now, I am very much overweight because of the food that they serve out there is usually fried foods or quick foods and stuff like that. Well, now they're passing laws out there saying, well, if you're overweight, you've got a sleep problem. So now you have to take these sleep tests. But, of course, I can't afford any insurance because of the way the insurance companies are now. And I can't afford to take that test. So now they're taking that my job away from me. And I'm trying to get lawyers to sue the DOT for passing laws that are against the Constitution of the United States.
You have no health insurance through your company, Harold?
No, none whatsoever. I drive for a small company.
Yeah.
And there's only five of us. And unfortunately, they don't offer any insurance, and neither does my wife's company. And she works, well, I shouldn't say it, but she works for an insurance company.
Oh, my gosh. Anne.
Most truckers are uninsured.
Really?
So very few trucking companies offer insurance. When they do, it's only after several years of employment, and the turnover is such that almost no truckers ever access health insurance on the job. And yet, because truckers make an average of $30,000, ACA insurance is expensive for them. So they're not under the cap where, you know, if you make a small amount of money, there's a lot of help with the payments. So most truckers remain uninsured and rather bitter about having to pay insurance fees on their taxes. But the other question is, because so older truckers like your caller are the experienced ones who know what they're doing, who can do the best job at avoiding accidents and all, you know, all the things that you want truckers to do. Those truckers are being driven from the industry by this incredible increase in legislation, such as the sleep apnea legislation that he's talking about. So at this point, if your neck exceeds a certain circumference, and it's different for men or women what that circumference is, then you agree to a sleep study. And almost everyone who is assigned a sleep study is found to have sleep apnea. And then you have to agree to have sleep apnea CPAP equipment in your truck that has compliance chips in it so they can tell how often you use the sleep apnea equipment. And the sleep apnea equipment is very expensive and needs to be cleaned in particular ways or you get sick because, you know, you breathe into it. So the whole sort of micromanagement of sleep apnea is a whole conversation in itself. And there are a lot of people who say that the people pressuring the state to require this are people who stand to profit from sleep testing and sleep apnea sales. I don't know if that's true. I can say that every time I went into a truck stop, the amount of sleep apnea paraphernalia available
is fascinating.
Incredible.
Really?
Shelves and shelves of the things that you need to keep your CPAP machine clean and functioning at every truck stop.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it is one of the ways that the trucking industry is managing itself into a bad situation because older truckers are being shoved out of the industry.
Mm. I'm sorry, Harold. I'm sorry to hear your story, and I hope somehow things get better for you. Let's go to Dan in Mauston. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
All right, Dan, how are you?
Good. I just wanted to, well, first of all, thank you for the topic, because your guest is making some really good points, especially about that CPAP thing. I know most of their company's insurance doesn't cover the CPAP, so they're left to fend for it for themselves, and then if they can't, then they don't get their, they can't hang on to their license.
Right.
But it is the micromanagement of the health issues is driving, like you said, the older truckers out. And it's creating a trucker shortage because it's not only are the older truckers being pushed out, but millennials aren't as interested in getting into the trucking industry as they were, you know, like in the 70s and 80s when truck driving was kind of glorified by movies like Smokey and the Bandit and maybe Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone, things like that. Now truck driving, like she said, it's kind of it's looked at differently by the culture. The benefit to that, though, is it's created a trucker shortage in most scenarios, which in my experience and from what I've seen in the last 16 years, it's actually driven wages up. CNBC published an article in November of last year stating that they're seeing a huge rise in trucker wages. And that to keep up, they're predicting that the industry is going to have to hire an average of 89,000 drivers a year nationwide for the next 10 years just to be able to keep up with the demand. Long-haul trucking specifically among the other drivers as a whole, local, regional, and long-haul, is sometimes looked at as kind of the beginner's avenue. A lot of companies will hire their entry-level drivers as long-haul because it's mostly straightforward driving. You're not driving in like Chicago traffic very often. You're not backing into a ton of docks and things like that. So the risk is smaller. So they'll require their beginner drivers to drive long haul. It does pay, you know, a lot of times starting around 35, 30 cents a mile. And if you drive 30 cents a mile and you drive 100,000 miles a year, sure, that's about $30,000. I would disagree that that's the average. That seems like it would be, I mean, I drive for a local company that we drive local, regional. We do have over-the-road guys, but we take guys right out of school on their first day and pay them $17, $18 an hour. Mm. And they can work anywhere between 45 and 65 hours a week if they want to. Unfortunately, there's no overtime because of the point that she made about us not being governed by the Department of Labor.
Right.
Some companies will still pay overtime. It's so extremely rare.
Yeah, thank you, Dan, for the call. It sounds like there's some variation from what we're hearing from a lot of truckers this hour, and when it comes to finding yourself a job that may pay a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. And he was also talking about hourly.
Right.
He said $17 or $18 an hour.
Right.
There's a debate in the trucking industry about whether hourly wages would be better, whether we would make more money if we were paid hourly, but since overtime is not a possibility,
right,
that's questionable. And also, as is now, many truckers feel like by driving more miles, we can make more money. So there's a lot of resistance to switching to hourly because everyone wants to be able to control to some extent what they do and what they're paid. So
sure.
There's some resistance among truckers to that.
Dan, thank you. Let's go to Mike in Greenbush. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Kathleen. It's always nice to hear truckers call, and I'm glad that you have this program. I had a CDL and still do, and I drove for 10 years across country, and I tell you, there is nothing more lonely than being in a truck for 16 hours a day, and the owners would prefer if you could drive 24. So all these laws are basically to protect the drivers, and what it's doing, it's having a boomerang effect. But imagine driving through Chicago at 2 o'clock on a Sunday morning, hopefully trying to miss traffic, and you get caught in a traffic jam, and it doesn't matter what the weather is. I mean, it's a brutal life, and it's a very lonely life, and I think the people who drive to Florida back and forth once wouldn't want to do that every week, and that's basically the equivalent of trucking. So you can imagine how draining it is to be in that truck, and sometimes you can't sleep, and then you got to get back in the truck. So It's indentured servitude, in my opinion.
Anne?
And one of the hardest parts is walking away from your life. You know, you
sure.
have a life. We've all structured something that we think of as our lives, and you leave it, and you have to leave it, and you don't have any regular ongoing connection with it again, and that's very hard to do.
Very hard to do if you have a family, too.
Yeah.
It's disruptive to them, right?
I mean, I have the greatest respect for the people who do it, and that's why I think it would be great if there were better protections for them rather than something that's marketed as protections for them that's really protections for the company or...
Let's go to one more call. We have about 45 seconds left, Buzz. I'm sorry, Baldwin. Go right ahead, Bill.
Hello?
Yes, Buzz. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to call and ask, maybe I missed it, but I know there's a lot of regulations on the truckers as far as how many hours their trucks actually, they can't move them if they're over their time, even if they got to move a little ways. There's a lot of regulations. However, I know a lot of doctors, airplane pilots, and policemen who work extended shifts don't get drug tested, don't have people... you know, beeping them every hour to find out what they're doing. I was just wondering what makes the truckers so much higher responsibility than jobs like those.
Okay, we have about 30 seconds. I'm sorry, Ann.
We as our culture don't respect truckers the way we respect doctors, right? We don't trust them. And that's one of the things that needs to change because they have so much responsibility. We should trust them around the same way we trust doctors and nurses.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve it.
Thanks, Ann, so much for being with us and for drawing attention. Thank you. Ann Bailey, former long-haul truck driver herself, assistant visiting professor of anthropology at Haverford College now. Thanks so much to Kendra Smith for producing this interesting show and for on-air production as well. Here in our studios in sunny, the sun is out, sunny downtown Milwaukee. News coming up tomorrow during this hour. The fever of 1721, the epidemic that revolutionized medicine and American politics. We hope that you will tune in for that. Thanks for listening.